I'm Judy Swallow. In for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. In Monrovia today, all eyes are on President Charles Taylor, whose resignation ceremony started 30 minutes ago. As Taylor takes his leave, 2,300 American military personnel are stationed offshore. But so far, only seven Marines have touched ground, despite calls for U.S. military intervention, even from Taylor himself.
If that is the challenge, I challenge George Bush. With all due respect, Mr. President, please, you are a man of God, do something for our people.
And so stands the American ultimatum. The administration has made clear that those forces will not land as long as Charles Taylor is in power. The question remains, will the U.S. live up to its promise to send in the troops when Taylor is long gone? Many African-American political leaders are saying that the U.S. response is already too little too late, and it's just one more example of white America's historic negligence of Africa. But other black leaders say that Africa's problems should be solved by Africans and not by Americans. Connection listeners, how connected do you feel to the African continent? Does history obligate America to help African nations end civil wars, solve poverty, wipe out AIDS? Or do African problems require African solutions? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So let me introduce our main guest today, Sally Booker, who's Executive Director of Africa Action, an advocacy organization in Washington, D.C. Sally's been working on Africa policy for two decades. He's lived and worked in 26 of Africa's 54 nations. Sally Booker, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So lay it out. What do you say the U.S. should be doing in Liberia?
Well, Liberia is very much the metaphor for the whole history of U.S. disdain for the continent of Africa and everything African. It is the stepchild of the United States, established as a colony in 1822 by the American Colonization Society, basically to rid America of liberated Africans in the United States. And a minority of African Americans at that time believed that this was the only way to seek freedom. And the returning African, American-born Africans who settled that colony created the first black republic in Africa in 1847. But the United States, of course, even though it was the parent, so to speak, refused to recognize this government.
Hang on a minute. You're saying the parent, but only 5% of Liberians are actually Americo-Liberians.
No, that's right. But I'm talking about the power that led to the creation of a state, the purchase of property, the settling of settlers, the power that in fact allowed for the establishment of this first independent black African state in 1847.
Okay, your line is America has a moral obligation here. How does that translate, in your view, with what should happen on the ground? Are you saying there's 2,300 Marines and sailors offshore, they ought to be on land by the end of the day?
Right. Well, if I must condense the historical landscape, it's more than a moral obligation. It's an obligation because the United States created the conditions that Liberians have faced for the last 14 years. The United States supported a brutal military dictatorship, particularly in the last decade of the Cold War. And then when the Cold War ended, walked away from Liberia because it was no longer seen as a strategic asset. So the United States is culpable for the very conditions on the ground. It's a moral obligation, but it's also a historic responsibility, and it's in the U.S. national interests. The U.S. has several national interests in preventing the spread of instability in West Africa, which Liberia has been the epicenter of. But I think the Bush administration decided over a month ago that it is not going to commit any significant U.S. forces for this purpose of securing peace and helping rebuild democracy in Liberia. I think it's very consistent with the overall racist orientation of the Bush administration toward Africa and indeed of previous American administrations toward Africa.
What exactly do you mean by that? Because, I mean, it has to be said that The U.S. is not the only country that's messed up in Africa, and Europe's history of meddling and making a mess of things is much more recent than the United States in this one little corner in Liberia. And it was just a small group of people who decided to have the colonization. So it was a small group then. It's a long time ago.
No, I'm talking about the larger role of the United States and as well as the other European powers in the slave trade, in the tens of millions of Africans that were enslaved and stolen mainly from West Africa and shipped to the Americas. I'm talking about the colonization of Africa by Europe with the support of the United States, the rape and pillage of its resources. All of this has contributed enormously to the conditions of impoverishment that Africa faces, which is linked very much to the enrichment of the wealthiest countries in the world, which are the United States and the wealthy European countries. Their wealth is directly tied to Africa's impoverishment.
But what are you talking about when we talk about the racist policy of the Bush administration? I mean, President Bush is just recently back from Africa, delivering $15 billion in...
No, he did not. He did not deliver $15
billion. To fight AIDS.
And that's a good example. Right. He did not deliver. He made a promise in his State of Union address, and he's broken that promise already. And any journalist pursuing this story knows that not a single dollar has been appropriated of that $15 billion. And that's a good example of the kind of manipulation of Africa's suffering to present a veneer of compassionate conservatism. That's a matter of racism as well. But it's not just the Bush administration. I'm talking about the history of U.S. policy and relations toward Africa, going back to the original Africa policies, which were the policies of the 1600s, to enslave Africans, to deny their humanity. That's the template upon which America's history of policy and of relations with Africa has been built. So Liberia should be seen within this context. It is the metaphor for this larger history, and it's why the United States is prepared to have 2,300 Marines just sitting offshore while people are suffering and dying in Liberia, in large portion due to U.S. Cold War policies.
Well, it seems that what you're saying there is you expect the Marines to go ashore, think that they should, and yet yours is not a united voice, is it, African Americans? Because Trans-Africa says very much what you hear in Europe, which is, look, African solutions for African problems. In fact, you hear that across the continent. We're sick of the colonizers coming in and saying it's up to them to decide what sort of governments we should have, how our country should be fixed. African solutions for African problems, and the leading lights of that are ECOWAS, the West African Community.
Well, that's not entirely accurate. ECOWAS has provided the leadership for negotiating the political settlement in Liberia, and they were the first to pledge to provide anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 troops. But they were also the body that explicitly asked for the United States to provide the leadership role in a multinational force with some 2,000 U.S. troops who would provide the leadership, the command and control, as well as logistical support, communications, etc., so that this multinational force would have been able weeks ago to enter and do its work. It's because of the U.S. reluctance that it's left once again to the Nigerians primarily and other West African countries to intervene in Liberia, as they did in the 90s when George Bush's father faced the almost identical situation in 1990. There were four American ships off the coast of Monrovia at that time. They evacuated the Americans. They evacuated the Europeans, whites, essentially, whose lives they valued, and they left the Liberians to their fate, which is the 14 years of descent into violence that the country has seen since that time.
But doesn't Trans-Africa have a point when they say it should be African solutions? Because the Nigerians were in Sierra Leone. Bill Clinton intervened through Jesse Jackson, got the Lomé Agreement. The Nigerians pulled out. The West Africans were doing a better job on their own before America intervened and tried to broker a deal between the president and the rebel leader. And what you got there was two more years of wretched civil war. I mean, the Africans know their own backyard.
Well, and that's why the Africans are also calling for the U.S. to play a leadership role. I mean, the point is, it is just irresponsible to expect the most impoverished countries in the world to have military forces capable of the same professionalism, discipline, controlled use of force as the armies of the richest countries in the world. In other words, if the Americans are saying, well, the Nigerian armed forces and the Ghanaian and Malian armed forces are just as capable as the United States, I don't think anyone's saying that. And the Africans understand that their own militaries are not up to the task of what's required truly to put Liberia back on its feet, to provide the security necessary for civil society and political leadership to rebuild its democracy. They accept that they have a responsibility and an interest and are prepared to contribute, but they also feel that the richest country in human history has an obligation and a responsibility. Essentially, this is a question for the future of international peacekeeping. Will it be done on the basis of a double standard? In other words, conflicts in Africa will get the B team. They will get the less trained soldiers, the less disciplined armies. And that's what happened in the 90s when Nigerians did intervene, but they also engaged in commercial enterprises and corruption, rape, human rights abuses, some of the most horrendous abuses that have been reported during that period were carried out at the hands of so-called ECOMOG peacekeepers. So Liberians are the first to have mixed feelings. On the one hand, they welcome any intervention to stop the killing. On the other, they are well aware of the history of unruly West African forces in their past.
It's interesting that Americans like yourself call yourself African Americans as opposed to Black Americans. If you're arguing the moral argument, are you still saying that that link is still that close? Do you really think at all that Africa resonates with, in quotes, African Americans now?
Oh, very much so. I mean, I think the fact that African Americans adopted that terminology as the preferred term once again, several hundred years later, is indicative of the importance of that identity. You know, in 1900, at the first Pan-African conference in London, the great intellectual and scholar W.E.B. Du Bois made his famous quote that the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. And I think for African Americans, the descendants of enslaved Africans brought over to this country, which created the economic foundation of this country through uncompensated labor and a horrible crime against humanity that was the institution of slavery, this connection is very real.
But that's a connection of historical guilt. Are you saying that it actually
resonates? No, it's not of guilt. No, it's one of identity and pride and history. It is one that requires the United States to acknowledge that America is a country of African descent, just as it is a country of any other descent, European or otherwise. And yet America has denied that descent. It has denigrated everything African. And so this has always been a long-term struggle for redemption of African people wherever they are in the world.
Right. Connection listeners, how connected, particularly if you're African-American, how connected do you feel to the African continent? We're talking about the divide in African-American political leadership over U.S. policies in Africa. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Judy Swallow, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Joining us now to talk about the influence of Black leadership on American foreign policy in Africa is Representative Donald Payne, the ranking member of the House Subcommittee on Africa and former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Welcome. We've also got with us Sally Booker, executive director of the advocacy group Africa Action. Join us. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Donald Payne, thanks for coming on. Tell us, first of all, the Black Caucus, does it have a united position on military action in Liberia?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the Congressional Black Caucus wrote the president several months ago, prior to his visit to Africa, and urged the administration to intervene in Liberia. Our chairman, Elijah Cummings, have had five press conferences dealing with the question of Liberia. We've had special orders. So to the person, the 39 members of the Congressional Black Caucus unified support the intervention of a military force in Liberia.
So send in the troops and Charles Taylor has to go, right?
Well, you know, if it was like Nero fiddling while Rome burned. We urged the U.S. to go in before President Bush even went to Africa. We thought that would have been a real good signal. It would have been deeds, not words. ECOWAS was asking for a combination of U.S. and Nigerian troops. We thought it made a lot of sense. The British foreign minister urged the United States to intervene, as they had done in Sierra Leone, as the French had done in Cote d'Ivoire, and currently are actually in Eastern Congo and Bunia, in Ateri province.
Yeah,
and,
you didn't quite answer my question about Charles Taylor. Even the reason I asked you, of course, is that Charles Taylor, along with Fode Sanko, the rebel leader in Sierra Leone, for a while they were sort of pals of the Black Caucus on the Hill, weren't they? I mean, you met Charles Taylor. Is it a problem to sort of say a problem for the Black Caucus to say the problem is a black guy?
Well, I've been listening to your Sally Booker interview, and you have more misinformation, which I'm surprised. The Black Caucus was not a friend of Charles Taylor. When Charles Taylor was elected president, the United States had a delegation that went over to the election, as they have done in most countries. We just came back from Nigeria. And at that time, there was an election that the Carter Center said was an election that was fair and free. And therefore, as a long time, as Mr. Booker clearly brought out, there was a feeling that there should be a representation with the administration to go to the swearing-in ceremonies, which did occur. There was no friendship with Fode Sanko. There was a move to attempt to have an end to the brutality that was going on, where the children and women and men were having their hands amputated, a practice that was brought in by King Leopold when they took over the Congo back in the late 1800s. Hadn't seen that really reignited until this Sierra Leone situation. And so the push was to have a ceasefire in Sierra Leone, and the Nigerians were there, but they were having a difficult time. They had a dictator running the country, and that changed to a elected president, and there could not be the same kind of behavior by the head of Nigeria as was before. It had to be discussed, it debated, talked about in parliament, with President Obasanjo taking over from the dictator Abacha. And so the Nigerians were even considering leaving, so there had to be some solution, which was done by the Clinton administration, not the Congressional Black Caucus. I just want to get the record straight.
Can I bring Sally Booker back in here, though? Isn't there a moral dilemma here for African-American leaders, Sally Booker, in that if you are talking to the American public, who's maybe not that connected to Africa, to say, look, you know, we've got good guys and bad guys here, or maybe no good guys or bad guys at all. We've got a complete mess, and all the leadership are black. What I'm trying to say is, wasn't it really easy when your biggest dilemma, your biggest moral problem in Africa was South Africa? It was apartheid.
Well, it was easy in the sense that one could identify clearly the evil of the system, the leadership, etc. It was extremely difficult because the U.S. government was an ally of that system, of that government. of that philosophy, indeed, of white supremacy that was so devastating to the lives of millions of Africans in southern Africa. But I think we have to point out there's been a longer history than is acknowledged of African Americans speaking out publicly in criticism of African leadership that has been abusive of human rights of its own citizens. Again, it was Trans-Africa that led the charge against the Nigerian military dictatorship in the 90s at a time when the Clinton administration was cozying up with the Abacha regime, mainly because the U.S. interests were in the oil trade with Nigeria. So again, African Americans provided the leadership in critiquing black African leadership. Whether it was Nigeria, whether it was Idi Amin in Uganda, or cases now like in Zimbabwe. Certainly it is a difficult challenge. I mean, the question is, what are the principal determinants of African-American views on policy toward Africa? The first one is that we struggle against racism in Africa and in U.S. policy. Second is that African-Americans have always opposed colonialism in Africa and imperialism in Africa. Liberia is actually the unique exception. But by and large, the focus now has been on support for promoting development, for fighting HIV/AIDS. We think the Western world's failure to really provide the leadership necessary to fight AIDS, which is the greatest global threat right now. It's not terrorism or weapons of mass destruction, but because AIDS is killing mainly black people in the world, there has been, you know, hardly a significant response. The head of the UN AIDS agency, for example, said if this were happening to white people, the response of the West would be different. I mean, more money was spent on mad cow disease in Europe than on fighting AIDS in Africa, which is killing 3 million people a year.
Congressman Payne, do you agree with that? You know, if it were white people, because you also served, I think, on the Balkans caucus. Do you think there are double standards? How do you argue that Africa is relevant to Americans?
Oh, there's no question about the fact that there are double standards. The behavior of the U.S. towards Liberia is a clear example. Yes, Africans are saying we should have African solutions for African problems. I just returned several days ago from a two-week tour to Africa, and there are a number of issues being solved by African countries. The IGAD movement in Somalia, where we failed to do a thing since the tragedy there, and the southern Sudan situation that the IGAD process is moving forward. We've seen in Burundi, South Africa, under Thabo President Mandela, former President Mandela, now Thabo Mbeki are involved there. And so there's no question that African countries are dealing with African solutions. However, they still ask for us to be involved. They still request that we have legal experts there to assist them in that. They ask us to have technical assistance. They ask for financial assistance. They ask for military intervention in certain situations. And as Sally Booker said, Liberia is a very special situation. Not only during the wars was Liberia so important. When rubber was cut off from the Pacific region, Liberia and Firestone, which actually prospered so much almost by slave labor in
Congressman,
Liberia.
I'd like to bring in a couple of calls here. 1-800-423-8255, because a very relevant one here. I think the caller is a native of Sierra Leone, Wooly, calling from Malden, Mass. Wooly, what's your point?
Well, my point is that this problem would have been solved a long time ago if the United States was very serious and determined to help, you know, the sub-region of West Africa, Sierra Leone and Liberia in particular, to solve this problem. Because I remember Sierra Leone had participated among all African countries in the coalition to oust Saddam Hussein from Kuwait. And then President Bush sent Colin Powell, who then, you know, chief of staff of in his administration or something, he came to Sierra Leone and met then President Momo. And Momo explicitly asked him to tell the United States to intervene and solve this problem since they have a leverage with Liberia.
Wooly, can I ask you, you know, Sierra Leone was a British colony. Why do you think it was America that should have done something about it and not Britain, who did it in the end?
Well, the problem was not to do something for Sierra Leone, but to restrain Charles Taylor and Liberia and Samuel Doe in Liberia. They had all the problem in Sierra Leone was from Liberia in particular. Charles Taylor had created confusion, used Sanko to steal diamonds from Kono, because Sierra Leone is diamond rich, and then to finance this war in Liberia. And then he promised, Sanko, if I finish Liberia, then we will take care of Sierra Leone. You understand? So I'm glad that the British did come to Sierra Leone finally and solve the problem.
So you think that the U.S. has an obligation to fix Liberia, that yes, they've left it to fester for too long?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you see, if Liberia had oil, believe me, they would have been there. You know, that's the bottom line. I mean, national interest for national interest for the United States is equivalent to countries that have oil.
Well, thanks very much for that, Donald. Congressman Payne, you know, what do you say to that? The U.S. has been fiddling while Liberia has been burning and taking all of West Africa with it, and the reason it's not done anything is the only U.S. interest is oil.
Oh, there's no question about the fact that oil is the key prime mover in our policy. They made it pretty clear, even with the Iraqi situation and how to deal with Iran and Saudi Arabia. The whole question of what should our relationship be with Saudi Arabia has to do with, well, they're the oil producers, and how tough do you get on them, and so forth. So oil, there is no question. I think that Vice President Cheney makes it very clear. Yes, oil is a strategic interest of the United States. But I agree with the caller. If there was a West Africa policy, it was no question. Not only Sierra Leone, but Guinea. Some of the lure is being supported by Guinea, because Guinea was destabled by Taylor. It's a small region, and we should have had a reasonable approach with the British, with the U.S., in West Africa, where we could have worked with the U.S. And British together, and even the French. Actually, the French went into Liberia and evacuated the first citizens out, even before the U.S. would go in.
A congressman saying something nice about the French. 1-800-423-8255. Vince joins us from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Vince. What's your point?
Well, I'm just a little tired of apologizing for something that happened, in our history in the United States. I mean, the United States had slavery. It was wrong. We took it upon ourselves through a civil war to end it. Maybe some of the mistakes were made in how we handle the situation, but how long are we going to have to apologize and pay for something that we can no longer afford to, that no people can't remember, number one? Number two is, you give these people self-determination, and I'm not saying people as in black people or white people. I'm just giving the people self-determination, and what have they done? They've squandered it.
Sally Booker, can I put that to you? You said that America's history in Africa is defined by slavery, and the current history is about the defining issue of the moment is race. Isn't it time to draw a line under it? My point that, this was all in 1820, that African Americans are now fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth generation Americans.
But the point is, precisely, we have to deal with 500 years of history that has very specific consequences. Racism is alive and well in this country and has consequences. The transatlantic slave trade was the greatest crime against humanity in human history. It has not been compensated for. There have not been reparations to the descendants of Africans enslaved and brought to this country, brutalized, forced to work in the most inhumane conditions, never compensated for their labor.
But and should that provided... still be driving foreign policy today?
Well, the consequences in Africa also haven't been addressed. Yeah, I mean, I'm simply, it's just naive to think that the worst challenges that Africans face, and they're some of the greatest challenges in the world today, whether it's AIDS or civil conflict or impoverishment, are the direct consequence of these centuries of policies, and there are responsibilities,
Vince,
on the parts of the states that carry them out.
Let's bring Vince in, see what you think of that, Vince.
I think, he's speaking about naive. My family came to this country well after slavery was over, and yet I find I am forced to apologize for something that my family had nothing to do with. My family.
But no one's seeking apologies. You've benefited from the consequences of that slavery. You've benefited coming to this country, a wealthy country, wealthy because it was built on uncompensated labor. If you are white and you've come to this country, you have benefited from the affirmative action available to all whites who come to this country.
So
and that is why.
Me, you're telling me when the Moors overran Europe and enslaved all of Europe that they don't owe me an apology for that because my family's from Europe. Okay, so
well,
when the Moors
they didn't overrun
Europe,
all of Europe and enslave
they,
all of Europe.
They enslaved the country that I came from, and I have, and this was back in what the 14th, 15th century, and I have.
Yes,
yet
and
to
are
receive,
they still dominant? Are they still dominant
yet,
in your country?
I have yet.
Gentlemen, if we can bring it to, if we can actually focus on the issue, Vince, are you saying that you think it's wrong that this is still driving America, or that it should be an issue as?
It's
Sally Booker
world,
is saying, in driving foreign policy in the U.S.
It's a world issue that these people need help, yes. It is not a United States issue only because I think that it's time for the apologies is over. Roll up your sleeves and go to work. Stop waiting for people to hand you a life. Nobody hands you a life in this world.
Let me bring
ever.
In Donald
you
Payne,
know?
Congressman Payne.
Sure.
What do you say to that? That Vince there is making the point that we're talking about 180 years ago. He doesn't see why foreign policy in the U.S. should be driven by something that happened so many years ago.
Well, the reason why Vince and many people like Vince and his family came to the United States of America was because the opportunity was here. And why was the opportunity here? The United States of America started with those 13 original colonies, and because it had this slave trade where Europe, as you know, did not, they were the slave traders, but they did not have universal slavery. A little vestige here and there, but as a matter of fact, the Irish argued against the British about it, so the British did not do it. And so Europe had the same kind of relationships with its workers. They did have poor people, et cetera, but they did not have slavery.
The United States was able to
grow economically, exponentially, and that's why it became this place of milk and honey that brought people from Europe and other parts of the world to
well,
the
Well, Congressman,
United States.
I think the question is, when do you say the debt is paid and you can draw a line under it? Do you have to have democracy and wealth across Africa before you can say America's collective guilt has been solved?
Well, you know, the exploitation has gone on up until today. During the Cold War, the only place where there was bloodshed was in Africa. The U.S. gave Mobutu a corrupt dictator, put him in office in 65 after Patrice Lumumba was killed by the Western powers, and billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars was given to Mobutu. Then in Angola, UNITA was formed and Jonas Savimbi was supported. The South African apartheid regime of P.W. Botha was supported by the United States. Atomic energies were cooperated with their
Congressman, we can't do the whole history of Africa. We'll come back to you right after the break. So, Connection listeners, does America have a historical duty to fix Africa, or do they make more of a mess trying to do so? You can call us, usual number, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Judy Swallow. You're listening to The Connection. I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. We're talking with Sally Booker, Executive Director of Africa Action, and with Congressman Donald Payne, former chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, about America's attitudes and policies in Africa. So, Connection listeners, what is America's moral obligation to Africa? Call us on number 1-800-423-8255. Gentlemen, we spent a lot of the hour talking about Liberia. I'd like to look at other specific examples now. Sally Booker, take the example of Robert Mugabe. The Bush administration has said, yeah, he ought to go. The British administration has said more or less the same things. An awful lot of people in Zimbabwe say no, and the neighbors throw up their hands in horror and say, you know, it's not up to you or us to tell the man to go. What should America do there, Sally Booker?
Well, the problem with Zimbabwe is that the U.S. government, of course, has no credibility in Zimbabwe.
And the British government has even less, yeah.
That's right. And last year, after the election in Zimbabwe, Secretary of State Colin Powell said, well, Robert Mugabe can claim victory, but he can't claim legitimacy. Well, in the eyes of African Americans, the same is said of George Bush, and certainly in the eyes of Africans who followed the elections here in the United States.
But there is no question
there is
rampant suffering in Zimbabwe.
That's
the United States obliged to fix Zimbabwe?
Well, no, I think that's the entirely wrong paradigm, the question of whether the United States should fix anything in Africa or whether it has a historical duty to fix Africa. Africans will fix their own problems. They deserve the support of the United States and other rich countries, but the leadership needs to come and is coming from Africans themselves. And in Zimbabwe, again, it's been African Americans who've provided leadership in criticizing the Mugabe government publicly, in encouraging greater African diplomacy, particularly from South Africa, Nigeria, the African Union, because our solidarity, of course, is with the majority of Zimbabweans, black Zimbabweans, who are suffering at the consequences of Mugabe's political repression, his economic policies. I lived in Zimbabwe for 4 years. Robert Mugabe was a hero of mine in the early 80s when I worked at TransAfrica, and we hosted him on his first state visit to the U.S. after he was elected in 1980. But he has, sadly, over the past 2 decades, sort of
been in power too long. So, Congressman Donald Payne, yeah. Can I bring you into this? Is it a problem in Zimbabwe, certainly, that to a great extent the victims are seen as white? It's not quite accurate, but an awful lot of the newspaper coverage has been the seizure of white-owned farms, and the black guy is perceived as the bad guy. Is that a problem?
Well, that's typical of what happens. There is no question that I think, my personal opinion, and Mr. Mugabe has overstayed his time. I think his time has come and passed. Joshua Nkomo was really the great leader, but he was outmaneuvered, and Mugabe finally won the leadership. I think that the whole land issue is something that should have been dealt with. You know, the Lancaster House in 78-79, there was an agreement that there would be a system of trying to rebuy the farms from the white settlers.
Yeah, that's our historical guilt.
Right, and U.S. was involved in it a bit too. President Carter will do a little bit. Some initial payments were made finally. Of course, the question was nothing could happen until 10 years, so it was late 80s before.
Yeah, but skipping over the history, is this a problem? Is this a hard sell for you?
It's Zimbabwe is when the question of land and few people owning most of the land, and isn't it fair that we should have the land? It to a person who doesn't follow it closely would say, well, what's wrong with that? They stole land in the first place, those white settlers, so yeah, you should take it back. And we've had have to deal with that whole issue. However, you just can't go and kick people off the land regardless to whether that was done originally, and there has to be some solution to the problem. However, many more Africans have been killed. I think maybe three or four are too many, but I think maybe four or five white settlers have died, but hundreds of black Zimbabweans have been killed by the security forces.
Okay, something must be done, but not the U.S. nor Britain nor the African nations. Let's bring in Akeem from Norfolk, Virginia. Akeem, what's your point?
Okay, I think I would like to appeal to the black churches to try to help Zimbabwe, because it is quite apparent that the U.S. government doesn't know how to help Liberia. So I would like to appeal to black communities, black churches, and I would also like to thank the Black Congressional Caucus and the organization of Sally Booker for all the help and interest they have shown in, you know, problems in Africa.
So who are you saying should get involved? You're saying the Black Caucus should
help?
The black churches.
You know, they could do any little help that they can do. We go a long way to help, you know, the people of Liberia.
Akeem, thanks very much for your call. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Chris is calling us from Norfolk, Virginia. Hi, Chris. What's your point?
Hi. I'd just like to first say I'm glad to hear this, you know, being discussed on the air. You know, I think it's clearing up a lot of things, a lot of misconceptions and whatnot. But, you know, I'm just amazed at, you know, the reaction of, you know, the American public with, you know, Liberia, you know, and rejecting you know, giving it help when, you know, there are so many parallels to the, you know, Iraqi problem, you know, and several in the past where, you know, nobody thought of regime change in, you know, to the extent that's going on there, you know.
Well, yeah, I know that when Saddam Hussein was being mentioned for regime change and somebody said, name one other leader in the world who's committed genocide in his own people and invaded all the neighboring countries, and the answer was Charles Taylor. So you're saying that that's the parallel, is it?
Yes, one of them.
One of them.
But, you know, I mean, Liberia was just, you know, I mean, it was just in the news, I mean, with Mr. Bush's speech and everything. And, you know, there was so much, you know, focus on it until, you know,
Chris,
it was found to be otherwise.
Chris, can I ask you, do you think the U.S. is obliged to do something in Liberia because they're on this sort of crusade of regime change and get rid of rotten leaders? Or is there a special obligation because it's Africa, because of the history of slavery, because of the connection to Africa, because of black Americans? Is it a different case than Iraq or the same thing as Iraq?
Well, I'm figuring, you know, if you're talking the talk, you might as well walk the walk, you know. Yes, I think it is, you know, obligated, you know, after what all has been said and done, you know, if in the past year.
Can I ask you, Chris, you're a black American, African American. Do you feel any connection to Africa? You ever been to Africa?
No, I haven't. But I do have a connection in the way that, you know, I can see that it's a lot of the same problems, mainly poverty, you know, was driving, you know, pretty much all the problems in Africa and the Middle East, you know, the haves and the have-nots. Well, that's my opinion anyway.
Congressman Donald Payne, can I ask you to respond to that? Is it, you know, this is Africa's Iraq, and that's where the obligation lies? Regime change number three.
Well, I say that that it is of special interest to the United States. I just think it's unconscionable that we did not act because of everything that Sally Booker and I have mentioned and that you know about the country. Even things like the whole flags of convenience. Ships happened to just go out of Liberia. That was basically really run by U.S. companies. They chartered and gave the flag. It was the flag of Liberia, but as American corporation, that the whole sea was controlled by it was either flags of convenience from Panama or from Liberia. The U.S. had been connected so much to Liberia. Voice of America put up the largest transmitter in Africa for the Cold War, and the Cold War was, like I said, fought in Africa. Even the U.S. support of NATO, where the last colonies were the Portuguese colonies of Guinea-Bissau and Mozambique and Angola and Cape Verde and São Tomé e Principe. Those countries were supported by Portugal, indirectly getting weapons from NATO, which was being totally supported in the early days by the U.S. So I think that there is a responsibility of regime change. I think that the argument for Liberia is because of the special relationship. I wouldn't say for all 52 sub-Saharan countries we should send in U.S. troops. That's why the British say, America, you should go in. And they're our biggest allies in the world, as you know, with their support of President Bush in Iraq.
General, before we finish the program, what I'd like to get from both of you is what you think the limits of American involvement should be, and if America should actually be imposing itself on African nations. Sally Booker, let's take what looks like a very benign example. You've got South Africa, the shining success story of Africa, and yet there you've got the big U.S. idea of lots of billions of dollars worth of AIDS money to fight AIDS in Africa, and a president who's been so reticent about it, Thabo Mbeki. I mean, is that a case where the U.S. should say, we know better than you?
Well, the U.S. can't, because it's not actually putting up those billions of dollars. In other words, if the U.S. doesn't provide credible leadership, it's not in a position, really, to criticize other leaders. I wanted to draw an important distinction between Iraq and Liberia. The you know, this issue of regime change is completely different there. There's not a parallel. The United States, the Anglo-American war on Iraq, if you will, was done in contravention of international law, the opposition of the United Nations, etc. In Liberia, you have Liberians, the government, the rebels, the civil society, the West African neighbors, the UN Security Council, all in agreement that a multinational force should intervene to provide security, to stop the suffering, to allow a humanitarian mission to occur in order to have a political settlement. You have to look at each of these issues on their merits and see what can the U.S. offer and contribute. But because the U.S. is so unilateralist in its global actions now, it doesn't want to act collectively with other countries to help solve what, in fact, are some of the world's greatest problems, civil conflicts.
Congressman Donald Payne, assuming the troops do go in the coming hours or days, what do you think is their mission, their end goal? I mean, we've got rid of Charles Taylor. We've got Moses Blah, who's more or less just a shadow of Charles Taylor. He might be gone in a few days. But you've got a total mess in there. You've got two rebel forces, one backed by Guinea, one backed by Ivory Coast. Does the U.S. have to stick in there, pull them all apart, sort out the country, put the three quarters that are out of the control of the central government back in control of the central government? Where does their mandate actually stop?
Well, it starts with them getting off the ships.
Good
They've
start.
Been in the ships for the last 3 months. So if we could get off the ships, that would be the first big victory for mankind. I think that a mission, they've had assessment teams there for several months. By now, they should be able to come up with a plan. I think that the first thing should really be is that Monrovia be made a weapons-free city, just the way the British did, making Freetown that way, and the French did for in Sierra Leone. Then once that is done, and I think that, as I indicated several months ago, I did not feel that the rebels would have any action against the United States. I met with Brent Scowcroft in 1991 when a similar thing was happening. Went to the White House with then chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, who's now head of the NAACP, Kwaisi Nfumi. We begged the administration, because they then had troops out in Monrovia, to go in and take Doe out. At that time, he was the stumbling block, and that civil war would have died. Charles Taylor would never have been able to roam around Liberia for three or four years and then get enough strength to become president. Taylor probably would not have been an issue.
Lot of historical baggage to clean up. Donald Payne, thanks very much for joining us. Congressman Donald Payne. My other guest this hour was Sally Booker of Africa Action. The Connection is produced by a lot of people, too many of them to name. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.